speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
It's Tuesday, April 21st, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. Now that we see that the coronavirus narrative has collapsed in a heap of stinking lies, the question is, what do we do about the collapsing economy? As I've said on Twitter this last weekend, you want to follow me, Libertarian? I said we didn't flatten, the government did not flatten the curve. The curve, as we're seeing, it made absolutely no difference. The Swedish epidemiologist is right. Government actions made no difference. People who were draconian in their shutdowns versus people who did very little or nothing, it made no difference. What we have done is we've flattened our economy. We've flattened our future. We've flattened our food supply. You know, we had a lot of very fragile businesses, from big businesses to small businesses, Humpty Dumpties that were sitting on the wall. And the president and the Democrats went along and shoved them off the wall. Now, are they going to be able to put them back together again? We got literally millions of small businesses and people who are unemployed. They can't even manage to get them a check. And so as we look at this and we look at what is happening to the food supply, we look at what is happening to oil, that is a harbinger, folks, of don't just, when you look at these situations, when you look at a stock market crash, or you look at something that is fundamental to the economy like oil, don't just look at this and say, well, you know, I'm not an oil producer. I'm not an oil company. I don't like those guys. They make a lot of money, or I don't have any money in the stock market, and I don't care about those guys jumping out of the windows or whatever. It's going to come around. And what they're telling you is these people, these oil companies, these stock markets, they are the canaries in the coal mine. And the poison gas is coming for you as well. Because when you look at the oil industry, it is, you know, the indicator of economic activity and what is happening with the economy. And that's why oil is crashing that much. I mean, they have oil that they no longer can afford to store. So they're paying people to take it off their hands. That's why it went down to negative $40 a barrel. Negative 40. I'll pay you $40 a barrel. Remember, it wasn't that long ago we were talking about the fact that, you know, they needed to have $40 a barrel in order to stay in business. Now we've got negative $40 per barrel. Now, some of the contracts, not all of them went that far. Some of them were going at 20. That's still nothing to cheer about. So you may enjoy temporarily your cheap gas. You may enjoy the schadenfreude, the dark joy of watching people who had done very well do very poorly. But understand that this is coming for all of us, and it was absolutely, absolutely unnecessary, unnecessary for the Democrats and the president to shut down this country. And if there's anything in you that wells up and says it's not President Trump's fault, well, you're just, you have been captured by this groupthink. You are following the leader. You're not critically thinking about this. The responsibility for this, oh, it's not President Trump's fault, it's Fauci. Well, how does Fauci remain there? Why is he being put up to the podium to answer all the questions? Why is the president mimicking everything that he has to say? Yeah, it's Fauci. It's not President Trump, right? Give me a break. You got to be some kind of idiot to believe that. We'll be right back. We'll talk about what's coming up. How many deaths should we shut down the economy for, right? We had 60,000 people, according to the CDC, last year die of the flu. They've now lowered their estimates to that same number. We didn't even notice it when we had 60,000 people die from the flu. I think they inflated that number. I think they're inflating this number. I think they're deflating the unemployment figures and the misery that's coming with that.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Tuesday, April 21st, year of our Lord, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. Let's take a look at what is going on in the overview. We're going to get into the economics of what's going on as you've got oil dropping to minus $40 per barrel. There are some harbingers of some really bad times coming up here. They've busted this economy in ways that they clearly don't understand, ways that we will soon find out, unfortunately. But we're going to take a look at what is happening. You know, I keep seeing these dire stories that just don't stop. You know, Fox News, CNN, Drudge Report, all of them putting up the most dire stories. Is it on my hands? Is it on my shoes? Is it on my clothes? How do I get rid of this stuff? The entire country has become OCD because of the CDC. And then we have this story here. Sisters die 102 years apart. One of them from the Spanish flu. The other one from the coronavirus. Well, gee, okay, so this is the Spanish flu, right? That is what you're going to conclude from this. That's the subtext of this that you're supposed to pick up from the propaganda, the CIA propaganda that is filtering out through the news media. Seriously. Oh, well, okay, two sisters died of the flu, and one of them is Spanish flu, the other one's coronavirus, so therefore they're the same, right? Well, no, actually, this is a 96-year-old woman who died here in Austin. She died from the coronavirus, or maybe she died with it, because she's 96. And I hate to break this to you, but we all have an upper limit on, the statisticians call it life expectancy. You know what the life expectancy here is in the United States? Just slightly over 78. So she lived 18 years past that. You know, it wasn't but a week or two ago that we had Kenny Rogers who died. He was 81, 82 years old. You know what the cause was? Natural causes. When you have somebody who is elderly and they have multiple health conditions, they don't go through and do an autopsy. They will say, yeah, natural causes. Because when you get old, so many things happen to your body that is really not unexpected. And we don't know which of those actually took you out. You know, we just had Jeb from Green Acres die. Now, his case, he'd been suffering from Parkinson's for quite some time. But folks, you know, you need to think about this. If you haven't thought about this, if you're panicking over the coronavirus, you need to think about the fact that you're going to die. Lord, teach us to number our days. And to think about this, a little bit of prepping going on there. If you think about it, you should be prepping for what's going to happen when you die. But this 96-year-old lady died of coronavirus. Her older sister had died from the Spanish flu. Therefore, the two of those are equivalent, right? No, they're not. And then we see this story also put out. A girl with a rare complication becomes the first Michigan child to die from coronavirus. Okay, so did she die from the complication or did she die from the coronavirus? Was the complication a result of the coronavirus? And so we're not seeing too many children die of this, right? Again, as I pointed out, just under 50% of the people who have died with this so far have been over the life expectancy age in the United States. Following 2 weeks on a ventilator, this young girl passed away. Oh, wait a minute. Now we got a third possible cause of death, the ventilator. You know, 80% of the people who get put on a ventilator die, although the hospitals are making a profit with the very first person they put on the ventilator if it's a COVID diagnosis. Get $13,000 for diagnosing somebody with COVID from the federal government. Then you get another $39,000 for putting them on the ventilator. The ventilator cost $50,000, so now they've already got $52,000, and that's not counting the charges for 2 weeks of use for the ventilator or for the room for 2 weeks, or for doctors and nurses for 2 weeks. She got meningoencephalitis, a rare complication, they said, of the coronavirus, which caused swelling of the brain tissue and a lesion on her frontal lobe. Well, if this is a rare complication, it may be due to the coronavirus, or it may be due to something else, if it's that extremely rare. It's extremely rare for a child to have this. Extremely rare for this to be complicated. A complication. The family lives in a zip code that is among the hardest hit there in Michigan. So, is there something geographical about this? So, if we really want to trumpet this, and they talk about the tragedy of this young girl dying, and they talk about her family and so forth, and it is a tragedy. Every death is a tragedy. And it is a tragedy when a young child dies. It's a tragedy when somebody who's 96 years old dies. But it's not uncommon. And should we shut our economy down for this? Should we panic everybody? Should we continue to panic everybody? And this is a Breitbart article. Everybody's doing it, right? Everybody is doing it. And we are reaping the harvest of everybody screaming fire in a crowded theater. How many people have to get trampled by this? It's just amazing to me. So when we look at this and we say, well, is this some kind of a geographical connection here? In other words, is this an area? This is coming out of Detroit area, I think. But if this is a concentration in this zip code, is it something about 5G? Because we know that not just 5G, but any kind of electromagnetic radiation exposed to people in close proximity, which is a key thing about 5G. Dr. Alan H. Fry, decades ago, documented by injecting dye into people's bloodstream, he documented that when you are exposed to microwave radiation, that it breaks down the blood-brain barrier, toxins, bacteria, and viruses can then travel from the blood into the brain. Could that be why this is happening? We don't know. So could it be the ventilator? Could it be 5G in the area, breaking down the blood-brain barrier? Could it be the coronavirus? Could it be something else? Oh, it will be counted as COVID-19. And then we see the insanity as this is continuing. In Vienna, Austria, they have a new design for a park. Shows how a park could allow for social distancing. They call it Parc de la Distance. An Austria-based design firm put this up. They said the path is about solitude. It's a way to go to the park. You stay in a maze. A maze. And they said, we think that this is an appropriate geometry because at all times you keep a safe physical distance from each other. This is one of the lasting things that's going to come out of this, a kind of perpetual solitary confinement, even if you are in open spaces. Is that here to stay? Well, certainly the paranoid appears to be here to stay. We have officials in California. Show video clip number two. They used sand to fill up a state park. I think this is one where they pulled in 37 tons of sand. And I mentioned this the other day. I said, well, I'm sure that those workers were essential workers, right, that were filling up the park with sand. Now, what you see here are the skateboarders coming out and removing the sand so that they can skateboard, or at least making paths in it. Meanwhile, in the town of San Clemente, California, citizens took a different approach. When the government put out their sand pits, they said, we'd like to thank the city of San Clemente, who, after overreacting and irrationally shuttering all of our beaches and trails, came to the brilliant conclusion to use taxpayers' dwindling dollars to at least create for us a new beach up at Ralph's Skate Park. Now we have a new beautiful beach to kick back and enjoy a few coronas on while we wait out the Wuhan flu. Then, when it's over, we can use even more taxpayer dollars to clean all the sand out and carry it back to North Beach, where it is so badly needed. Meanwhile, the Miami Herald looks at the packed beaches, and an op-ed there says, well, this will work very nicely to thin the ranks of Trump and DeSantis supporters. Actually, it wasn't an op-ed piece. It was a tweet. It said, these Trump supporters and Republicans and DeSantis and so forth, they value money over health. Well, yeah, I don't know. Are they paying people to go to the beach? Is anybody paying to get the Miami Herald? If they are they buying it simply to use it as toilet paper? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Looking at all the
Yesterday, I talked about the fact that as we have seen the models collapse into absurdity that came out of the Washington State University, funded heavily by Bill Gates and the Gates Foundation and so forth, talking about how, well, there's going to be 2 million people die, 1 million people, 200,000, 100,000. Do I hear 80,000? Then they went to 70,000. Now they've lowered it to 60,000, which is about the number of people they say died last year from the flu. Did you notice that last year? I forgot about when we shut the entire country down last year over the flu, over 60,000 deaths. I said this so many different times, so many different ways, comparing these statistics to accidental deaths or various other diseases and so forth. And now, of course, we see people are not getting heart attacks anymore. They're not getting pneumonia. They're not dying from pneumonia either, or from regular flu so much. All of those things have just gone straight down as we have, at the same time, seen a spike in the reported number of COVID deaths. They've got to get those deaths up real quick before their lockdown ends to try to extend it, but also to try to do a cover their butt. And so now they're redefining COVID-19 deaths, not just if you do a test. If somebody dies and they've got some kind of respiratory issue or a heart issue, then do a test. And if it comes back positive, regardless of how sick they were with anything else, you call that a COVID-19 death. Now, the new rules from the CDC, as we've seen the number of heart attacks plummet, number of deaths from heart attacks plummet, the number of deaths from pneumonia plummet, the number of deaths from flu plummet. That's because the new rules say you don't even have to test them. You just presume that it's COVID-19 without doing any testing. And so we saw an immediate jump of 10,000 deaths as soon as they did that. They've got to get up to that number. You know, they've got to get that number up because they're going to look pretty bad. And we ought to demand that these people be removed so they can't do this again. But as we look at this, even as all of that is happening, even as the Fauci narrative and the CDC narrative is collapsing, we see that they continue to escalate the tyranny and the demands that they make on our lives. Even as these numbers are just collapsing from 2 million in stages down now to 60,000, they continue to make more and more demands. Mask. You'll never shake hands again. You'll never be allowed out in public without a mask again. You will have to have immunity passports. You'll have to be tested everywhere. President Trump is saying in the press conference a week ago, last Tuesday, well, you know, I want the governors to start testing people. We can't let people out until we got all these tests distributed. That's why they're waiting. That's why they're waiting. And he says, and I want the governors to think about testing people coming into their state and going out of their state. Well, President Trump, we're going to have something to say about that. You're not going to get the last word on this. We're not going to accept this kind of chain. We're not going to accept this kind of restriction on our movements. We're not going to accept the TSA at every state boundary. Sorry, not going to happen. Not going to happen. I don't care if you do have an R behind your name. You're not going to do this to us, President Trump. And so when we look at the masks, a lot of people now are looking at this. I mean, I see ads. It's a money-making thing. Lots of ads for all kinds of creative bandanas and so forth. And now we've got somebody in Florida who wants to sell face masks made from the skin of a Burmese python. Why not? Okay. Why not have something like that? The python skin doesn't protect people from becoming infected with the virus. Although he said the masks may eventually come with a filtration system similar to N95 masks. It's not important whether or not it protects you. That's not a requirement. This is psychological. It's not medical. As I've said many times, you know, we showed yesterday listener who said, hey, I was in Pflugerville at a Target, and they demanded that I wear this Kleenex that was folded over and stapled with hair bands to go around my ears. Come on, folks. This is to the point of absurdity. And I even said to people, I said, so explain to me why, if you're concerned about this, why I must wear a mask. Can't you just wear a mask? Oh, no, it has to trap your particles when you sneeze. And it's like, well, doesn't your mask do that? Oh, well, it comes into my eyes. You know, I sneeze into their eyes, except I'm not sneezing. You're assuming that I'm sick. Everybody is assumed to be sick. Everyone everywhere is sick. You're all suspected as infected. And you must be treated and quarantined, even though you're healthy. You must have that done to you. And you must be given a fine. So you are now sick until you prove that you are well. Prove by tests or by vaccine, immunity certificate, to the satisfaction of Fauci and President Trump that you can now travel. This is what we're talking about here, folks. If you're concerned about this, wear something over your eyes, wear a mask, you'll be fine. And if you're still concerned, just stay home and let the rest of us live our lives. But we're not going to have these kind of restrictions put on us. Here's another example of people who think that this is going to last forever. This is coming out of France. This is also sent to me by a listener. By the way, you want to send me tips, you can send it to David Knight Show at Proton Mail. That is encrypted, so you can send me whatever you want. But let's play video clip number one. This is out of France, and it looks like these guys were reading a Jules Verne novel. Because they've got, like, Captain Nemo bubbleheads. I mean, they're going out like they're going underwater or something. And this is literally a product. There's a lot of people who want this to be your future. Not for me. Not for me. I'm not going to live my life that way. Frankly, I'd rather die than have these kinds of restrictions arbitrarily put on me. And then, even as I laughed about the story about, can the coronavirus be spread through farts? Yeah, that was out over the weekend, and now it's been picked up several days later by the New York Post. They got a Drudge link. And they're now saying it's not one Australian doctor, but two Australian doctors are now saying, well, we think that the coronavirus could be spread through farts. And as I said, are they going to demand that we wear plastic diapers now when we go out in public? And they said, well, no, it would be fine if you just wear some pants. Is that not already happening? No bare bottom farting, they said. You don't fart close to other people and don't fart with a bottom bare. And so we contacted the French Minister of Health and asked him for a comment, and he had this to say.
I fart in your general direction. Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberries.
Yeah, we got a lot of sons of hamsters out there, don't we? And by the way, when you speak of elderberry, there are some reports out there that elderberry does help as an antiviral, but I'm not making any claims about that. And unfortunately, although these people are making claims about farts in your general direction, they do point out that there's not a great deal of research. Oh, well, then that would be kind of like the rest of this whole COVID nonsense. Not a whole lot of research before we shut down the entire world. We were just following the Chinese. Monkey see, monkey do. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Liberty, it's your move. This is the David Knight Show.
All right, so how many deaths do we need to shut down the entire country? How many deaths do we need to completely restructure our legal system and our society? You know, we go back to 9/11. We've already been there once before, right? We had more than 3,000 people die immediately, and of course we had, are still having people who died because the government lied to them, told them it was safe to go back into that area. And they got long-lasting respiratory diseases, cancer, and other things. We were lied to by the government in every way possible, and they've been lying to us for 20 years. Now we have Attorney General William Barr, has now blocked the release of 9/11 documents. Are you really surprised? As I said before, do you realize where Bill Barr comes from? This is a deep state CIA agent. Before he was George H.W. Bush's attorney general, He was George H.W. Bush's partner in crime at the CIA. So would you really expect that he's going to allow these documents to be released? As a matter of fact, would you really have expected that somebody like this would have been put in this position of Attorney General for President Trump? But, of course, he was put there, and many people believe that Barr is a good guy because he stopped these obvious coup attempts against President Trump. That's the most recent one. But also helped to shut down the lies about Russiagate and so forth. Just as we look at these failed attempts to take out President Trump, that does not excuse what Barr is doing or even what anybody in the Trump administration is doing now to shut down this country. But let's take a look at how this investigation was shut down, because, folks, you understand that if we don't push back on President Trump, if we just give him a pass, we're going to get something that is worse than the Patriot Act. They're already setting up precedents, even if they don't put up legislation. And while all this is happening, we have some of the most draconian gun control laws that are running their way through many different legislatures across this country as everybody is focused on this event. Yesterday, Attorney General William Barr, acting director, and also the acting director of National Intelligence, Richard Grenell, and other senior officials called on a federal judge to prevent the disclosure of files related to the role of the government of Saudi Arabia in September 11 attacks. See, we're not even getting to the real core of the truth. We're just talking about the way that the Saudis were used as a scapegoats. Because, you know, once you start fingering these guys and taking some money from them, they might just start telling us what really happened. President Trump promised the families that he would help them to uncover the truth about 9/11. He made similar promises while he campaigned for president, writes activist posts. Derek Brose is the author of this. Had a quote from Brett Eagleson, a banker whose father was killed in the World Trade Center. He told ProPublica, he said, he looked us, President Trump, looked us in the eye on 9/11. He shook our hands in the White House, and he said, I'm going to help you. It's done. He said, I think the 9/11 families have lost all hope that the president's going to step up and do the right thing. He's too beholden to the Saudis. One of the attorneys for the 9/11 victims' family said, how can these secrets that need to be kept from the American people all this time? Why can't we know? And then we look at Saudi Arabia, for example. They've now executed a record number of people in 2009, according to Amnesty International. They put to death 184 people in 2019, a record number even for Saudi Arabia. And so the number of executions also doubled in Iraq last year to 100. Iran remained the second most prolific executioner after China with 251. But, of course, in China, the number of executions there, and people don't know, but it's believed to be in the thousands because that remains a state secret. And I don't know, nobody knows exactly how many. You look at these situations where there's reports by many people saying that they remove organs from prisoners who are still alive. They don't bother to kill them first because they want to harvest them fresh, kind of like Planned Parenthood. But now we have the governments worldwide mimicking China. Because whatever China did with the coronavirus, we've got to do that. And now they are sending over drones out of China to monitor and hector people, to measure their temperature, to come after them with loudspeakers and so forth, because we have to do everything that they do. We have to have biometric surveillance. We have to have punishment for people who don't toe the government line. And you see this happening now with Facebook and Google saying, anybody that talks about wanting to reopen the country, we're going to suspend you. And, of course, they did that to many people here at InfoWars, talking about what was coming up this last weekend. Kicked off of Twitter. Facebook shutting down any groups that are trying to organize and to exercise their constitutional rights to redress their grievances in the public square. YouTube doing the same thing. And so it's not just the biometric surveillance or the censorship. It's coming up as punishment, right? That's the beginning of the punishment. Because the other part of what we're doing that is just like China is to have the corporations as the rulers, because you understand, even though we call them Chinese communists, the people in Hong Kong understand they're fascists because they own these country, these companies. And when you have these companies here that are the velvet glove for the iron fist of DARPA and the military-industrial complex, the CIA, here in this country. Yeah, so when do our executions begin here in the United States for people that are not politically correct? But as we look at the number of executions, let's say just in Saudi Arabia, let's just take that number because, you know, it's higher. In Iran, they have 251. Iraq, they have 100. In Saudi Arabia, they got 184. So let's pick 184. How does that compare with the coronavirus on a state-by-state basis? Well, it turns out that, you know, there are Arizona had 191 deaths, and they were number 22 in terms of rankings. Alabama had 165. So there are 28 out of 50 states have fewer people killed with coronavirus than the Saudis have executed. Maybe what we should do is shut down Saudi Arabia instead of shutting down America. 28 states have fewer people who have died than the Saudis have executed. There's another metric comparison for you. And, you know, when they kill somebody, there's no doubt about it, the cause of death. There's a lot of questions about whether or not COVID is the cause of death. So when we look at the Saudis, many people say, oh, well, they're the Wahhabists, they're the worst, or whatever. Well, just look, you got Saudi Arabia, you got Iraq, you got Iran. They represent the three branches of Islam, the Wahhabists, the Shias, and the Shiites. Maybe what we need to be worried about is the viral spread of Sharia, the viral spread of Islam. Maybe that's a greater threat to us than COVID-19, but really the greatest threat to us is our own government. Mises Institute, exactly how many deaths are needed to justify giving government control of everything? Government control of everything. That's why I say, don't say it's authoritarianism anymore. It is totalitarianism because they are controlling everything in a dictatorial way. They have no legal authority, no constitutional authority to do this. And when you have authoritarian control of everything, that is what totalitarianism is. And as I point out, the CDC estimates that about 61,000 Americans died from the flu during the 2017 through 2018 flu season. They have a range of between 46,000 to 95,000 deaths because they don't know. Everything the CDC puts out is an estimate. And it's always been an overestimate because they want to scare you, frighten you into getting your annual flu shot. And now they have another method to get you to get your shots. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. As I was saying before we went to break, exactly how many deaths are needed to justify giving government control over everything? Over everything. And how many businesses need to be destroyed? How many lives need to be destroyed? How many jobs need to be lost? How many farms need to be bankrupted? How many farms need to get to the point where they're not even planting any food? If you go to the grocery stores, most of you, I've had a lot of people writing me, stores, shelves are about 50% full. Shortages of meat, shortages of dairy, and this is just the beginning, folks. Because the stuff that's being sold now, that is being represented by the 50% there, this does not represent the people who have said, well, I'm not planting potatoes. I gave you the story about the guy in Idaho. And even in Idaho, somebody drove 8 hours to get free potatoes from this guy. Had millions of potatoes to give away. I mean, you would think that in Idaho, you could find some potatoes somewhere without driving 8 hours. He was astounded. But he also said, I'm not going to be planting any more potatoes. My farm's, this farm has been in my family for 133 years. This is very unusual. Yes, it is. Even when we had the Great Depression, after the stock market crash in 1929, it took a couple of years for us to get to the unemployment level that we have reached now. And yes, I read you the unemployment figures yesterday, that the official unemployment figures. They said 13%. Folks, a month ago, when President Trump started pushing out Fauci's orders saying, we're going to close all restaurants, you're not going to have more than 10 people in a building at one time. And that was a basis for shutting down all the restaurants. When that happened, that happened March the 17th, I remember it. It was my wife and my anniversary of our first date, trying to get something at a restaurant. They closed it. My wife got in, and I've given the story. The waitress said, well, I've just been told I'm out of a job. That was a month ago. I don't know how she's surviving. And that previous weekend, that was a Tuesday, that previous weekend, they had asked in a poll how many people had lost their job, and 18% of the people said they'd lost their job at that point in time. That was before they shut down, or had somebody in their family, I should say, had somebody in their family who had lost a job. And that was before they just shut down all the restaurants. And, of course, these farmers are going out of business because, you know, they have to, many of them depend on restaurants as customers, right? And even if they don't exclusively supply restaurants, that is enough of their business. Look, if you run a business, there's very few businesses, I would say nobody, but there are very, very few that have such a broad profit margin that you can afford to lose 20 or 30% of your business and stay in business. You just can't, not for very long. And so many of these small businesses are saying, if you keep us shut down for more than a month, we'll be out of business. We'll never be able to come back. And so Bill Gates says, well, we need to shut them down for at least 10 weeks, 2.5 months more, just to make sure we've killed every one of these little middle-class mom-and-pop shops and nobody's here but us billionaires. So now the real issue becomes, you know, how are they going to pull this back? Not how many deaths are needed to justify giving the government control over everything, because they didn't need to have any. They needed to have some projections, some models, you know, just like they did with climate. Climate change. Oh, everybody's going to die, so shut down the entire world. And instead of doing this over years or decades, as the lunatics, the alarmists, the climate alarmists wanted to do, the COVID alarmists got us to do this based on faulty assumptions and faulty models that were filled with garbage data, they got us to do it in a matter of days. And so if you want to prepare, one of the things that you need to do, and I'll just, this is our last segment here, and I need to plug here. Take a look at the products we have at InfoWarsStore.com, because it's not just products to support your health and your immune system. You know, yeah, we have vitamin mineral fusion drink mix. You can get your baseline of minerals. If you're concerned about this, then, and you should be. You should be concerned about whatever's going to come down the pike. You always want to make sure that you're in your best possible health. And so, you know, you can get antiviral zinc and all of your other vitamins and minerals and amino acids in an easy-to-take drink format with a vitamin mineral fusion drink mix. That's now 50% off. We have Winter Sun, our vitamin D3. And again, that is a hormone. Vitamin D3 is a hormone that helps to actually regulate your immune system. It's not antiviral. It's not going to attack it, but it will make your immune system stronger and help it to respond to things. As people, I've read you the op-ed pieces going back to March 25th this year, MedPage Today, Dr. John C. Umhaugh, who works at the National Institutes of Health. He says, as a public health specialist at the National Institutes of Health, I outlined how a lack of sun-induced vitamin D in the winter and early spring leads to epidemic acute respiratory infections, and this probably includes viruses like COVID-19. Groups that have low vitamin D levels, the obese, the elderly, those with dark skin, may require 5,000 IU of vitamin D each day to get the level to fight that. So you want to make sure that your immune system is healthy. You want to make sure that your body is healthy, but you also want to make sure that you've got food for the future. And we're now taking orders for storable food. If you don't need it, you will still have it. We have our storable food from the Ebola outbreak. I was concerned about that. It lasts for 25 years. It's made in America. It's non-GMO. The best packaging you're going to find anywhere. Even after you open it, you can reseal it. So take a look at the products we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That supports this program and everything that we do here at InfoWars. And it will also have, we have programs, products that will support your health as well. But let's go back to what is going on with this. Because the Mises Institute, they talk about issues of freedom, issues of economics. And they said, okay, so the CDC is now saying they've lowered it from 2 million to 1 million to 200,000 to 100,000 to 80,000, 70,000. Now they're saying 60,000. Taking 61,000 deaths as our baseline, because that's the number of people that died from the flu in 2017-2018 flu season. How deadly does a virus have to be to justify the destruction of our lives and to take all of our freedoms and to destroy the Constitution and to come up with some kind of a medical patriot act? Would twice as many as died from the flu last year? Because, you know, we didn't even notice that, did we? You know, we had when we had 61,000 people die of the flu, all the stores were open. People met each other. We shook hands. We stood next to each other. Everybody had normal lives when we had 61,000 people die from the flu. So how many should we have? How many people should die before we shut down everything and reorder our society? Should it be twice that many? Well, you know, they're estimating that even this year, you know, it could be 95,000, whatever. Who incited the panic, writes Mises? Because, you know, nobody is ever safe. We all live in a world of uncertainty. That's until many people panicked and allowed the government to drive us into our own caves. And this is really what's happening, folks. If we go back to the allegory of the cave, Plato's allegory, you know, what happened if they keep you in a cave and they control everything that you see and they manipulate the way you think about life? You know, that was a perfect analogy for television, for your news media that is now dominated by about three or four different big corporations projecting all that information onto the wall of the cave and making sure you don't see anything else, right? And so you get projections from the media. And what are they projecting? They're projecting projections from the CDC, from their models. So who incited this panic? Media and social media initially sounded the alarm. They sparked the fear. But it was government that provided the justification for that fear. They wrapped dour pronouncements in a veneer of supposed science and truth. Soon, the panic threshold was breached, and while the various media live off of provocative headlines, government survives off of fear. As Mises himself noted, only a group that can count on the consent of the governed can establish a lasting regime. Whoever wants to see the world governed according to his own ideas must strive for domination over men's minds. It's impossible in the long run to subject men against their will to a regime that they reject. And that's why, folks, you had the people who were with the military-industrial complex testifying in the Senate after the big headline guys from Facebook and social media and Google and so forth left. The guy who was really behind all that comes in, somebody who's not very well known, but he was with the military-industrial complex, and he said, yeah, we've got to make sure that we control social media and what people see and hear. And that's why Facebook is now purging all the groups who want to assemble to redress grievances.
Keep on lying. Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
The National Restaurant Association has said that nearly two-thirds of the industry's workforce is now unemployed. Nearly two-thirds of everybody who works in restaurants have lost their jobs. About $240 billion in losses for the restaurants. They said that more than 60% of restaurant owners say that existing federal relief programs, including the CARES Act, you know, government cares, doesn't it? It just cares. That's about as true as the Patriot Act was patriotic. The fact that the CARES Act is about government caring for you. They don't care. Give me a break. The Republicans, the Democrats, they don't care about you. All they care about is keeping themselves in power. So 60% of restaurant owners say that in spite of this so-called CARES Act, they will not be able to keep their employees on the payroll during the downturn. It's estimated that there are more than 8 million restaurant employees who have lost their job. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, as I pointed out, they always, just as the CDC always overestimates dramatically the number of flu deaths and flu cases each year, and then they take that arbitrary, they estimate the number of cases, they estimate the number of people who died, and then they come up with an estimated fatality rate, and then they do the same favor for COVID-19. That's all made up, folks. Just like the unemployment figures, the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows a nearly 2.6% increase in unemployment rates. So they say 2.6% when you got 8 million people out. Come on, they're not even in the ballpark. Their orders of magnitude off. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable how the government lies up one side and down the other. As Mises Institute article talks about this, government always is looking to extend its power by taking our liberty, right? That's how they get powerful. That's why I say, if you're going to jump into this and you say, keep me safe, protect my job, keep me from starving, here, take my freedom. Take the Bill of Rights. Take the Constitution. Use it like toilet paper. I know there's a toilet paper shortage, so President Trump and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell, please use the Constitution for toilet paper. Yeah, when you do that, the government is a zero-sum game, folks. You either make the decisions about your life or the government does. You can't have two people making these decisions. So when you give up your liberty, you become a slave to that extent. As they point out in the Mises Institute, they said it wasn't too long ago that the enemy that we all had to be afraid of. Right now, we have a concealed enemy. It's perfect, right? They have to manufacture consent. They have to manufacture, they've got to have the population begging them to take everything away. And they were able to do that with their allegory of the cave, with government statistics being projected up onto the cave wall by the media and social media and making sure you don't see anything else. They were able to gaslight everybody and have them begging the government to take away our freedom. And you always have to have an enemy. Sometimes it's internal. Sometimes it's invisible. Sometimes it's like, the invasion of the body snatchers, which is what this is like. But it wasn't long ago that the devised enemy was ISIL. Remember that? When we had the Toyota trucks, and these people, even though they were 5,500 miles away, they were threatening our lives and our freedom. And now they've come up with, and then they had the climate change. That was going to threaten our lives as well. We were all going to die from that too. But now we have the dream of all these government tyrants, some kind of invisible novel virus that you don't know anything about, and they can make up anything about it that they want. And it's not just a dream, it's a scheme, folks. Can you imagine, as I point out here, can you imagine people who just yesterday, so it seems, who would have said certain acts of government, such as closing churches, would ignite a rebellion, but now they gladly consent to these authoritarian edicts. Why is that? We'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
We have an Idaho State Representative, Heather Scott. And she says this economic shutdown is no different from Nazi Germany. And we have people at Ross Story and other news media broadcaster says, well, I'll just play this and we're going to have a new segment, hashtag no comment necessary or whatever. And he plays what she has to say and he just comes back and just in a snarky way, just makes faces, smirking. at the audience on the TV. Can you believe that? I don't even have to say anything, do I? You don't know what to say. Well, maybe you should think about it. Maybe you should actually tell us how she's wrong. What she said was, it's no different from Nazi Germany. When you have government telling you that your business, whether or not your business is essential or non-essential, we got a problem here. I mean, it's no different than Nazi Germany, where you had government telling people either you were an essential worker or a non-essential worker, and non-essential workers got put on a train, right? That's absolutely true. You're just a useless eater. Let's get rid of those people. These other people are still alive and kicking, even though we haven't given them much to eat. You know, we go back and we look again at the origins of this bioweapons program. Where'd that come from? It came from Operation Paperclip. We didn't defeat the Nazis. We moved them to Washington, D.C. The people that were the very top. Even people like Wernher von Braun. Tom Lehrer had a great song about that, right? The rockets go up, the rockets go down. It's not my concern, says Wernher von Braun. And he ends it by saying, in German or English, it's all the same, right? And now I'm learning Chinese. Yeah, he did that back in the 1960s. But, don't forget about the fact that this hero who we brought over here to run our rocket program had developed the V-8 rockets to kill people during the war. Massive war waged against civilian populations at random. I didn't try to, hit any particular targets. It was just a campaign of terror. How did he build those rockets? Well, at Peenemunde and other places, he used slave labor. And as long as they were able, he didn't have much money to, or didn't want to spend much money on feeding these people, but as long as they were able to move around, that was fine. Once they started getting sick, you just get rid of them. They're non-essential workers. That's what she's saying. You can't take away people's lives and property without compensation. That's exactly what this Republican governor, Brad Little, in Idaho, would be doing. I mean, they're already calling him Little Hitler, Governor Little Hitler. Look, folks, hats off to somebody who doesn't give somebody an excuse because they're part of their political establishment. She's a Republican attacking the unconstitutional, authoritarian, totalitarian actions of a Republican governor. And we shouldn't give a pass to President Trump when he institutes the totalitarian policies of a lifetime bureaucrat, Fauci, who is in alliance with Bill Gates. Why are we doing that? Seriously. As Misa said, people who would, you'd have thought, just yesterday had a lot to say about businesses being shut down, about people being forced into unemployment, about churches being shut down. Oh, they just give it a pass because they like the party in power or the politician in power. And in this Mises article, they talk about the Eichmann trial. They said at the trial, instead of saying, what horrible things I did to people, the murderers said, what horrible things I had to watch in the pursuance of my duties. How heavily the task weighed upon my shoulders. It reminds me of what Bloomberg said in that candid talk that he was having with a few people in a hospital. He said, look, we got somebody, we have to have the strength, as unpleasant as it is, this horrible thing, it's going to weigh on your shoulders, but we have to do it. We have an elderly man come in, he's got prostate cancer. We say, sorry, we don't have the money to spend to help you. I hope you had a nice life. Just going to let the guy go. So that's presented as a virtue by Bloomberg, by these other people. And so as Misa said, what you hear now, and you've actually heard this, the virus will let us know when we can reopen the country. Who said that? That was President Fauci. The virus is dictating policy. Because you see, it's not President Trump who's doing it. It's not Bill Gates who's doing it. It's not even Fauci who's doing it. It's the virus. That's why it's the coronavirus. The virus has been crowned king of the country. We don't have a constitution anymore. We don't have individual liberty anymore. The virus is the one that's doing it. I'm not doing it. Fauci's not doing it. Gates not doing it, says the president. It's the virus that's doing it. We're told that government officials are only reacting as the virus commands them to. Or is it Trump doing what Fauci commands him to do? I'm not sure. The enforcement agents that are spreading tickets and handcuffs, they're simply following orders too. Didn't we hear that at Nuremberg? I was just following orders. I was obeying Romans 13, right? Romans 13. I do what the government says. Well, no, there are transcendent moral issues here. There are transcendent laws and principles. They're found in the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence that these Nazis, and I don't use that term in a metaphorical sense, from the Operation Paperclip bioweapon programs that they refuse to shut down, as they tell us that they are just concerned about our health. Well, if Fauci was concerned about our health, he and Francis Collins at the NIH wouldn't have continued this bioweapon research at all these different universities, including coronavirus and bat virus at UNC Chapel Hill. They wouldn't have given $3.7 million to the Chinese for that same research, and they wouldn't continue funding it at hundreds of universities. They are literal Nazis. Literal Nazis. I don't care if they call themselves paperclip anymore or what. Government foments fear for its own purposes, writes Mises, and then it stands back and blames the actions on the enemy that it created. And we see enforcement agents that are ticketing and handcuffing and arresting people and handing out $1,000 fines to individuals because they're walking around outside without a mask on. Or $3,000 fines to businesses because they opened their doors and they were just following orders. But they weren't following the Constitution. We see a Pennsylvania owner saying that his business is being unconstitutionally shut down. He says, it's not a matter of hurting my wallet. It's unjustifiably closed down, unconstitutionally closed down. He said, it has nothing to do with me and my wallet. It is my right to open and to continue work. That right has been confiscated by the virus, the king virus, the coronavirus. He said, I believe this decision should be left to people, adding that businesses should be up to their standards to keep it safe and to adhere to the CDC's guidelines for social distancing, not automatically be closed. I actually support more freedom than he does. I say, if you as a consumer don't feel that the business is safe, don't go there to eat, right? Don't go there to shop. I wouldn't go into a store that I felt threatened my health. That's why I don't ride the New York subway. Besides the fact that I'm not there. I don't like riding the New York subway when I am there. As a matter of fact, you now have an MIT professor saying the subways seeded the massive coronavirus epidemic in New York City. More than half of the more than 40,000 coronavirus deaths in the U.S. have come out of New York and New Jersey. It's not only the most densely populated region of the country, it also has by far the heaviest daily usage of mass transit, particularly subways. New York City's multi-tentacled subway system was a major disseminator, if not the principal transmission vehicle of coronavirus infection during the initial takeoff of the heaviest daily usage of mass transit, particularly subways. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. There's Lair.
Some have harsh words for this man of renown, but some think our attitude should be... Gather round while I sing you of Wernher von Braun, a man whose allegiance is ruled by expedience. Call him a Nazi, he won't even frown. Nazi schmatzi, says Wernher von Braun. Don't say that he's hypocritical. Say rather that he's apolitical. Once the rockets are up, who cares where they come down? That's not my department, says Wernher von Braun. Some have harsh words for this man of renown, but some think our attitude should be one of gratitude, like the widows and cripples in old London town, who owe their large pensions to Werner von Braun.
All the people who are going to owe their free hero. Income to Fauci,
Once
right?
Once you've learned to count backwards to zero, in German or English, I know how to count down. And I'm learning Chinese, says Werner von Braun.
Spot on. Spot on. And that's where we are today, isn't it? You know, when we look at, ask the question, how many people need to die before we give complete control of our lives to a medical tyranny? Every aspect of our life. Totalitarian government run by a bunch of public health bureaucrats who've been there for their entire lives, like Fauci. And as we look at what has happened in the aftermath of this, let's talk a little bit about abortion. Since we're talking about Nazis and we're talking about eugenics and euthanasia and abortion and all these different types of things, you know, we just had, my wife sent me this picture of a dad with his 28-year-old premature twin babies. Now, these are babies that are quite a bit younger than full-term babies that would be aborted by Governor Northam or any of the Democrats because, you know, they are proud of aborting babies that are full-term, 36 weeks, all right? And so this is a 28-year-old premature twin babies. You see them holding hands. This is what we're doing here, folks, in America. We are murdering babies. And as we look at the death toll here in Texas, the manipulated CDC statistics tell us that we've had 495 fatalities from COVID-19. This is up from 287 fatalities just a week ago. What happened? People here in Texas, I keep asking, you know anybody that's got COVID-19? You know any friends, relatives, anybody that you know has got COVID-19? No? I haven't found anybody yet that knows directly. They know of people they've read about, somebody way far away in the press, because when they find one person, they say, that's died from COVID-19, they make it international headlines. But the jump from 287 to 495, that was because the CDC started counting people that they hadn't even tested. Now, they've been saying that if we test them and they've got COVID-19, we're going to say that's the cause of death. Now they've extended it to say we're not even going to test them, and you just call it COVID-19. And so we had a big jump of 10,000 people, spike, just like that. And so that's why we see this big jump. It's not because something is happening other than CDC statistics that are being manipulated. But let's just take a look at how many babies are typically aborted in Texas. In 2017, we had 55,440 babies aborted in Texas, according to the CDC. Now, the shutdown in Texas began a month ago, March 19th. It's when Governor Abbott shut things down. It was a couple of days earlier in some of the California areas of Texas, like Austin, where the Democrats were controlling things. At that point in time, you had Abbott... shut everything down. And I think there'd been about 24 deaths, according to the CDC, from COVID-19 a month ago. Now, on April the 13th, there were 297 deaths. And Abbott then extended that another month. So some people say a week ago it was 297. Some say it was 287. Statistics, you know, from the CDC. They're malleable. So here we are, April 20th, 495 have died. Now, if you look at 55,000 abortions, a little over 55,000 abortions in a year in Texas, that would mean that in 1 month you would have about 4,620 abortions, deaths of the babies, like the ones that you just saw there. So 10 times the number of babies would have been murdered here in Texas than the number of people that the CDC says died, presumed to have died from COVID. But we didn't shut down the economy because of the murder of babies. Maybe God did. You think? Maybe that happened. I don't know. But let's just go back 3 weeks, March 31st, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. 3 weeks ago, March 31st, more than 150 people will die per day, and Texas will have a shortage of intensive care unit beds at the peak of the coronavirus pandemic in the state, a scientific model predicts 3 weeks ago. This is what they were predicting 3 weeks ago, 150 people a day. Now, understand, you know, we had a jump of about 200 people in a week, even after the CDC upped its COVID-19 deaths by just presuming. Don't test, just presume they died of COVID-19. So we got a spike nationally, 10,000 deaths. Even with that, we had 200 people die in a week. But they were predicting 150 people a day. They said Texas will suffer more than 6,000 deaths from COVID-19. Who was this that was saying this? Well, you know, it's coming out of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Everybody was saying that. Everybody was pushing that to Governor Abbott. But it was actually coming out of the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington School of Medicine, the School of Medicine that gets a lot of money from Bill Gates there in Washington State. They based it on death rates. What did they base the death rates on? They made it up. They based it on social distancing policies and the idea that every person who had it was going to infect 2.3 other people and that there was going to be a very, very high rate of death, which they had no idea what that was. And they came up with hospital bed usage, which we know here in Austin, in Texas, that they predicted 9 times the number of hospital beds that were going to be needed. In Washington, they predicted 10 times the number of hospital beds that they were going to need. In terms of ventilators nationwide, they predicted 40 times the number of ventilators that were actually needed. These are the people at the University of Washington School of Medicine, funded by Bill Gates. And they were telling us 3 weeks ago we were going to have 6,000 deaths in Texas, 150 a day. They panicked the public. They panicked the Republican governor, Abbott. And without any authority, he shut down the entire country, the entire state. President Trump shut down the entire country. And the exact number was 6,029 people in Texas that would die. And they said, as of that day, the state had had 38 deaths that the CDC had said were related to coronavirus. So then here we are today, April 20th, and here's a headline from the Daily Beast. COVID-19 death undercount is scarier than you think. The Daily Beast. What else would you expect from the Daily Beast than that kind of disinformation? And of course, that's linked by the Drudge Report. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Free speech to free minds. This is the David Knight Show.
So Bill Gates, Washington University Medical School, and its models, its failed models, were predicting here in Texas that we would have 6,029 people, precisely, die in Texas, 150 people a day, a month ago. And so you had the Republicans shut down the entire economy here without any legal authority whatsoever. And even as that story has collapsed in a pile of statistical lies, even as they've said, well, okay, let's just count people, just don't test them, just presume they've got it. Even with that, it's not even close. And yet you've got the Daily Beast out there saying today, actually it was yesterday it came out, April 20th, COVID-19 death undercount is scarier than you think. As the number of coronavirus deaths around the U.S. passed 40,000, there were emerging signs of hope. Hospitalization rates were decreasing. They weren't just decreasing. They never materialized. Daily death tolls were beginning to flatten. But as mayors and governors, with the president's blusterous urging, began easing restrictions and other emergency public health measures, sending Floridians back to packed beaches this weekend, for instance, the Daily Beast says, we still need a better understanding of the true number of COVID-19 deaths because, you know, they just won't take no for an answer. They must have their pandemic. They must have their continued shutdown. Folks, this is psychological. It is political. It is not, does not have a medical basis whatsoever. Let me give you 8 experts You don't believe me? Don't believe me. Then fine. Listen to some people who are infectious disease experts, epidemiologists, doctors. Eight of them here in this one article from offguardian.org. Dr. John Lee, an English consultant histopathologist at Rotterdam General Hospital. He said there's potentially even more serious problem here. The way that the deaths are recorded. If someone dies of a respiratory infection in the UK, the specific cause of the infection is not usually recorded unless the illness is a rare notifiable disease. That's the term, notifiable disease. Somebody dies of a very rare disease, you notify the government of this. He said the vast majority of respiratory deaths in the UK are recorded as bronchopneumonia or pneumonia, old age, or a similar designation. We don't really test for flu. Hear that? Flu is not a notifiable disease in the UK. We don't test for flu. We don't test for other seasonal infections. If the patient has, let's say, cancer or motor neuron disease or another serious disease, this will be recorded as the cause of death, even if the final illness was a respiratory infection. That means that the UK certifications normally underrecord deaths due to respiratory infections. But now look at what has happened since the emergence of the political agenda of COVID-19. And I threw in the political agenda. He didn't say that. The list of notifiable diseases has now been updated. And this list, which includes things like smallpox. Hey, if you got somebody with smallpox, we need to know about that. If you got somebody with rabies, we need to know about that. Because as he points out, most UK doctors will never see that in their entire life. And so if you got a serious disease that is extremely rare, somebody dies from it, you let us know, they said. It could also include things like, smallpox, rabies, anthrax, brucellosis, plague. He said, but now they've added COVID-19, not the flu. The flu is not a notifiable disease. COVID-19 is a notifiable disease. So every positive test for COVID-19 must be notified in a way that would not happen for flu or other infections. Few tests have been carried out in patients with mild symptoms. This means that the number of positive tests will be far lower than the number of people who have had the disease. What does that do? Well, that inflates the fatality rate. As I said, they want to inflate the fatality rate and then tell everybody it spreads like wildfire to panic the public. And that's exactly what they have done. Sir Patrick Vallance, the government's chief scientific advisor, went on to say, another expert, he suggested the real figure for the number of cases could be 10 to 20 times higher than the official figure. If he's right, that means that the headline death rate due to the virus will be 10 to 20 times lower. In other words, if you increase that denominator, your fatality rate comes down. And that's exactly what we have seen in L.A. and in other places in California. The distinction between dying with COVID and dying due to COVID-19 is not splitting hairs. I've talked about this over and over again, and he points out this doctor says it's not splitting hairs. Consider some examples. You have an 87-year-old woman with dementia in a nursing home, or you got a 79-year-old man with metastatic bladder cancer, or a 29-year-old man with leukemia being treated with chemotherapy, or a 46-year-old woman with motor neuron disease for 2 years. All of them develop chest infections and die. All of them then test positive for COVID-19, yet all were vulnerable to death by chest infection from any kind of infective cause, including the flu. So they list it as COVID-19. Dr. John Oxford, an English virologist and a professor at Queen Mary University, University of London, a leading expert on influenza, including bird flu, and, listen to this, folks, the 1918 Spanish influenza. This guy is an expert on the dreaded 1918 Spanish influenza epidemic, which I pointed out at the top of it. You got this subversive article out there saying, oh, look at this. You have sisters who died 102 years apart, one from the Spanish flu, one from COVID-19, to try to make the two equivalent. That's the subtext in that article. Understand how you're being manipulated by the CIA, by the press, by the NIH, and by the CDC. Personally, I would say, he said, the best advice, this expert on influenza and the 1918 influenza, he said, personally, I would say the best advice is to spend less time watching TV news, which is sensational and not very good. Personally, I view this COVID outbreak as akin to a bad winter influenza epidemic. He doesn't believe that it's anywhere close to the 1918 Spanish flu, and he's an expert on that. In this case, we've had 8,000 deaths this last year in the at-risk groups, in other words, those over 65% of the people with heart disease, etc. I do not feel this current COVID will exceed this number. We are suffering from a media epidemic. Guys, get up video clip number 4, Professor Newt Witkowski. We'll talk about him coming up here and just saying we'll let you hear what he has to say. But let's go to Dr. Klaus Puschel, a German forensic pathologist, a former professor of forensics at Essen University, current director at the Institute of Forensic Medicine at the University Medical Center in Hamburg-Eppendorf. He says the virus influences our lives in a completely excessive way. This is disproportionate to the danger posed by the virus, and the astronomical economic damage now being caused is not commensurate with the danger posed by the virus. I'm convinced the corona mortality rate will not even show up as a peak in annual mortality. All those we have examined so far, all those he had examined so far, had cancer, a chronic lung disease, were heavy smokers, or severely obese, or they suffered from diabetes or had cardiovascular disease. The virus was the last straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. COVID-19 is a fatal disease only in exceptional cases, but in most cases, it is a predominantly harmless viral infection. In quite a few cases, he goes on to say, we found that the current corona infection has nothing whatsoever to do with the fatal outcome because other causes of death are present. For example, a brain hemorrhage or a heart attack. But you notice, with the CDC numbers, the heart attacks have plummeted. The CDC has managed to fudge the data to get COVID-19 as the leading cause of death in the U.S. And anybody that sells you that statistic, dismiss them as a government shill, a liar, somebody who is selling panic. This has gone on far too long, folks. We don't need to give a pass to anybody who is selling disinformation like that. Nobody on any network, including InfoWars, when Mike Adams does it. Speculations about individual deaths that have not been expertly examined only fuel anxiety, says the doctor. Dr. Alexander Kekulé, a German doctor, biochemist, held the chair for medical microbiology and virology at Martin Luther University. He says it's impossible to wait for a vaccine. People under 50 are very, very unlikely to die or get seriously ill from the coronavirus. We have to let them get infected so they can develop immunity. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I've been running through this article. It's very important to listen to these people who are eight experts, medical experts, people who track infectious diseases, people who study epidemics, people who are the head of medical universities, not just somebody who is at a particular university. And I want to play for you a clip from Professor Newt Witkowski. You probably heard of him at this point in time. He has worked on epidemiology for many years. He says, I've been an epidemiologist for 35 years. That means he studies epidemics. I've been modeling epidemics for 35 years, he said. And this is what he has to say. Let's play video clip number 4.
With all respiratory diseases, the only thing that stops the disease is herd immunity. About 80% of the people need to have had contact with the virus, and the majority of them won't even have recognized that they were infected or they had very, very mild symptoms, especially if they are children. So it's very important to keep the schools open and kids mingling to spread the virus, to get herd immunity as fast as possible. And then the elderly people who should be separated and the nursing homes should be closed during that time can come back and meet their children and grandchildren after about 4 weeks when the virus has been exterminated.
And so what do you make of the policy that was enacted in the United States and England and most places throughout the world? This policy of containment, the shelter in place, etc. What's your opinion of it?
Well, what people are trying to do is to flatten the curve. I don't really know why. But what happens if you flatten the curve, you also prolong to widen it, and it takes more time. And I don't see a good reason for a respiratory disease to stay in the population longer than necessary.
And what do you say to people who say we just didn't know about the lethality of this virus, and you know, it was the smartest thing to do was just to basically do what we did and contain everybody because we just didn't have the data?
Oh, we had two other SARS viruses before. Or coronaviruses. It's not the first coronavirus that comes out, and it won't be the last. And for all respiratory diseases, we have the same type of an epidemic. If you leave it alone, it comes for 2 weeks, it peaks, and it goes for 2 weeks, and it's gone.
Yes, but we have to widen it. See, you understand? This is the curve that they're talking about. Farr's Law, going back to 1840, he looked at smallpox epidemics, plague epidemics is where he came up with the curve. This is what this epidemiologist is talking about, because you've had many epidemiologists say, I don't know why they're not paying attention to this curve. They talk about flattening it. And as he said, well, if you flatten it by trying to keep people apart, all that does is prolong it. It widens the curve. Why would you want to prolong this? Well, there's a lot of reasons why you would want to prolong it. You would widen the curve and flatten it if you wanted to flatten the food supply, if you wanted to flatten jobs, if you wanted to flatten your political opponents, if you wanted to flatten our future, if you wanted to flatten the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and they've been able to do all of that, haven't they? Dr. Klaus Kuhnlein, a German internist based in Kiel, says half of the positive tests that we've gotten could be wrong. PCA tests often show false positives. You can ask Professor Geirenzer in Berlin about this problem area. The tests are very sensitive. If you have only one molecule of something, the test can show positive. That doesn't mean the patient is sick. This is why John Rappaport, over a month ago, said don't count on these tests. They don't give you any idea as to how serious this is. As you point out, one molecule of something, it doesn't tell you if the patient is even sick or if they even have coronavirus. It doesn't get isolated, but one relies wholly on these tests. Now, this is a German internist, Dr. Klaus Kuhnlein. He said, spreading panic in large parts is founded on news from Italy. He said, nowadays, one doesn't know how much of it is fake news. I've seen Italian doctors online where I have compelling suspicions that something isn't right in what they say. I'm a clinician, and I don't see a new disease on the horizon. If you took away the test, the PCA test that shows positive, if it finds one molecule of something, if you took away that test, says Dr. Kuhnlein, life would go on as before. There wouldn't be anything to see. Dr. Gerard Krauss, the last one we have here. No, I take it back. We got two more. Dr. Gerard Krauss is the first one. Department of Epidemiology at the Helmholtz Center for Infection in Braunschweig. Also director of the Institute for Infectious Disease Epidemiology in Hanover and chair of the PhD program in epidemiology at the Hanover Medical School. He had this to say. We have to keep these serious social measures as short and as low as possible, because they could potentially cause more illnesses and more deaths than the coronavirus itself. Now, I'm not an expert in epidemiology. I just know politics, and I know history, and I know human nature. And I said from the very beginning, regardless of what this virus is, I said, I hope that this is not engineered as a bioweapon. But even if it is engineered as a bioweapon, doing these kind of measures will only make things worse. You will have two problems. And I said, as we saw the panic then, as they started shutting it down, I said, well, let's hope, and I don't see any signs that it is as serious as people have feared. I said, I don't think the engineering of a bioweapon, if that's what it is anywhere close to the potency of the sociological engineering that is going on here, the psychological engineering that's going on here, the political engineering that is going on here. That's what you have to fear. I even made the example. I said, look at King David. Yeah, when he was told by God that he was going to be judged, he gave him some multiple choice tests there. He could be persecuted by men or he could be persecuted by a plague. He said, I don't want the guys. I don't want to be persecuted by men. Give me the plague. I even said that. But this guy is saying, look, we have to understand that there are these measures have consequences of life and death as well. He says, although my focus is on infectious disease, I believe it's imperative that we consider the impact on other areas of health and society. We as a society must not focus solely on the victims of the coronavirus. We know that unemployment, for example, causes illness, even increased mortality. It can also drive people into suicide. Restricting freedom of movement is likely to have a further negative impact on public health. He's not even talking about the model of biometric total surveillance in a totalitarian society, a high-tech technocratic tyranny, as we have seen in China. And everybody is imitating what's going on in China. We've had mainstream media. As this was rolling out in Italy, they said, well, you know, this has been pretty creepy what China has done, but it could save our lives if we institute the system of tyranny that China has done. And that's exactly what Fauci and these other people want to do. Dr. Gerd Geirinzer, a German psychologist, a professor of psychology, director of the Harding Center for Risk Literacy. Imagine that. Imagine if we had literacy when it came to risk. He said the 2009 swine flu epidemic killed hundreds of thousands, mostly in Africa and Southeast Asia. But in Europe, where the threat was comparatively small, the media updated the death toll and the number of suspected cases on a daily basis. In the UK, the government predicted as many as 65,000 citizens would die from swine flu. In the end, fewer than 500. Predictably, such daily accounting triggered fear, led politicians to make hasty, ill-advised decisions, such as stockpiling medication without examining the evidence. Similarly, millions of people, particularly in developing countries, die from malaria and tuberculosis each year. And in the United States alone, listen to this, hospital-acquired infections kill some 99,000 patients annually. Yet these unlucky people get paid no attention. Why are we scared of what is less likely to kill us, says the director of the Center for Risk Literacy. You are illiterate. If you take these numbers from the media panic and you look, two people died, let's shut down Austin. What's the context? What is the risk? Let me tell you what the risk is. The risk is the economic risk that we're facing now. The risk is the fact that we have shut down our ability to deliver and even to manufacture food and medicine and many other vital things. We've turned this country into the Soviet Union. Folks, you can still get supplies online. You don't have to get hassled if you're not wearing a mask to go shopping like they do to everybody here in the Austin area. You can get your food online. If you don't need it now, you can save it for 25 years. Non-GMO, Made in America, InfoWarsStore.com. You can also get your vitamin D, Winter Sun, 50% off. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off.
Broadcasting with the power of the First Amendment. It's the David Knight Show.
All right, I want to finish up with that last expert. I just read you eight experts from the UK and Germany talking about this psychological operation we call COVID-19. This last individual compared it to the swine flu. And remember, who was at the center of the swine flu epidemic? Well, it was the World Health Organization. It was Fauci and others. Fauci, who vouched for the safety of the Pandemrix vaccine, which was rushed to market in only 4 months. And remember at the beginning of this saying, we can't let you guys out of your little hobbit holes for 18 months. it's going to take us that long to get a vaccine. We can't do it anytime less than 18 months. We got to do testing, you know. We've got to be assured that this is going to be a good thing. Well, he'd already vouched for these people, rushed a vaccine to market. The lawsuits are still running through the vaccine court. He told everybody it's very, 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 very safe. Yeah. Did it in 4 months. But they said, no, we're not going to. Not going to be able to do that in 4 months. Oh, my. No, not at all. Well, as this guy, Dr. Gerd Geirinzer, a German psychologist, and he's the director of the Harding Center for Risk Literacy, he said, when the swine flu spread, many governments followed the World Health Organization's advice, and they stockpiled Tamiflu, a medication that was marketed to protect against the severe consequences of flu. Yet, many expert advisors to the WHO had financial ties to drug manufacturers, and there is still no evidence that Tamiflu is effective. The U.S. wasted over $1 billion, says this German professor. The U.K. wasted over $522,000 on this medication, money that could have been invested in improving health care. That's right. But it went into the pockets of the people that are part of the big pharmaceutical industry that Fauci loves so much. And so when we look at this, we see that when they first had the first test that came out from the CDC were contaminated with coronavirus so bad that they had to send it back. And so you had the FDA investigate this. It was tests that had been provided by the CDC. And they were contaminated. And so the FDA began an investigation, kind of similar to what happened at the Tulane University National Primate Center 6 years ago, where they had a very dangerous bacteria that was brought in, Burkholderia pseudomallei. It got out of the biosafety level 3 lab, and it was in the wild with the 500 acres and a bunch of primates that were there. And they bring it in for gain-of-function research to make it more deadly, more easily spread, even though without treatment, that bacteria will kill 40% of the people. Far more dangerous than coronavirus. But they wanted to make it more lethal. This is the kind of stuff that's funded by the CDC, by the National Institutes of Health. And they never did find out how that got out of the labs. When they investigated the coronavirus tests that were contaminated with coronavirus, you're going to get some positives with that. It's already been smeared with the coronavirus. Oh, they found that the workers were coming in and out. They didn't change their clothes. They didn't wash their hands. A really pretty sloppy work, as we have seen at these hundreds of biosafety labs spread out all over the country. These universities where they do this kind of research. They did things like they mailed live anthrax to the mail, but they have a lot of very sloppy procedures. These are the people who are lecturing you and I about how we have to wear masks everywhere. You know, even if they're just little Kleenexes with, stapled together with hair rubber bands. You know, we need to do that. But these are the people that are bringing in deadly diseases, weaponizing them, and they don't follow any procedures like that. Maybe they should start washing their hands or something. You think? Unbelievable. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
The U.S. has tested positive for tyranny. Yes, that's the, we should title this segment here. CDC failed coronavirus tests were, in fact, tainted with coronavirus, reports Ars Technica. The CDC sent states tainted test kits in early February. The test kits themselves were seeded with the virus. Now, you may have heard these things had to be sent back because the kits were defective. How were they defective? They already were tainted with the disease that they were supposed to test. The CDC has been vague about what went wrong with the test, initially only saying that, quote, a problem in the manufacturing of one of the reagents had led to the failure. Shortly after the problems became apparent in early February, the Food and Drug Administration sent Timothy Steinzel, chief of in vitro diagnostics and radiological health, to the CDC to investigate what was wrong. According to the Times, he found a lack of coordination and inexperience in commercial manufacturing. Problems that led to the contamination included researchers coming and going from labs working on the test kits without changing their coats, and researchers sharing lab space to both assemble the test components and to handle samples containing the coronavirus. They were not practicing virus distancing, were they? Talk about, these are the people lecturing us on social distancing. These are the people lecturing us to wash our hands. I don't need your advice, Fauci, about how to wash my hands or whether or not I should wear a mask. This whole thing is a masquerade. What a load of crap. And as I just pointed out, we've seen the same types of failures from these CDC-associated labs all over the country. Sloppy actions. You got biosafety level 3 and 4 labs where they've got holes in the respirators that these people use, exposing their workers to risks and so forth. But now everything is fixed, right? We have President Trump touting the tests coming from Abbott Labs a couple of weeks ago. It's an all-new ball game, said President Trump. I want to thank Abbott Labs for the incredible work that they've done. They've been working around the clock. It was like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And he said they're going to deliver lightning-fast results in as little as 5 minutes. What he did not say is that the results would be accurate. They can be fast. A little expression, good, fast, and cheap. Pick any two at best, right? Well, in this particular case, we get one. It's not cheap, and it's not good, but it is fast, okay? All right, we're clicking right along here. In recent days, state and hospital officials found in internal studies that the devices frequently produced inaccurate results, leading at least one hospital to return the devices, they said in interviews, according to the Wall Street Journal. Most of the dozens produced since identify the genetic footprint of the virus, but they use different machines, methods, and materials, including obscure ones, such as chemicals derived from the bacteria that are found in hot springs and deep sea thermal vents. This is explained by one epidemiologist. He said, well, let's imagine that you are looking for somebody in a crowd, right? And so what you do is you say, we're going to send somebody in the crowd, and we're going to have, he's going to be at a Yankees game. Now, instead of wearing a blue cap that says Yankees on it, we're going to give him one that is white with blue pinstripes on it. Then I'm going to send a team of investigators into the stadium to try to find that guy because he'll have a unique cap. Well, it turns out he comes back, that they come back, and they bring back five people who had a white cap with a blue stripe on it, and yet none of those guys were the guy that they were looking for because he decided to take off his cap. See, you're not looking for the actual thing. You're looking for something that's associated with it. You understand? The blue cap was associated with him, but they weren't looking for him. They were looking for something that was associated with him. And that's what they're doing in this test. They're looking for things that are associated with it, or they're looking for one molecule of it. And so he said, you know, they are looking for things that we might find typically in hot springs or thermal vents or whatever. It isn't necessarily unique to this. Most require a long list of components that come from different producers, including swabs, throwaway polystyrene parts, chemical reagents, glass pipettes, pipette tips, and more, resulting in a complex supply chain that easily breaks down when there's a shortage of any particular element. Yeah, we have a society that has a long, complicated supply chain. And this is not something that's new. This is not even necessarily a result of globalism. That's why I pointed out when I did iPencil, this is something that's been going on for a long time. And there were global aspects involved in the manufacturing even of a pencil going back into the 1950s when Leonard Reed wrote that. This is nothing new. What is new is governments deciding that they would just break that supply chain in multiple ways by which they have absolutely no clue. But now we're going to use this test that is absolute garbage, President Trump. You're encouraging at your press conference a week ago. You said, yeah, I think, you know, we're going to have these tests in order to let people out because, you know, that's what Fauci told him. And he can't think for himself. And he doesn't read the Constitution, so he wants governors to test people leaving states or entering states using this garbage test. Unbelievable. Well, maybe the tests work, maybe they don't. But Breitbart says L.A. County did a study. They found the coronavirus outbreak was up to 55 times more widespread, but far less deadly than predicted. Remember what I said? They're only testing people who are in severe straits, and then that means that they get a positive. They get a high fatality rate. Well, when they started testing everybody in certain areas in California, they had the U.S. they had USC, University of Southern California, and the health department released preliminary study resulting in roughly 4.1% of the county's adult population having antibodies to the coronavirus. So this test is not looking for something that's, they're still not looking at the coronavirus itself. They're looking for antibodies that are related to it. So maybe this case, this test is true. Maybe it's not. I don't know. So they said they found between 221,000 adults to 441,000 adults in the county had had the infection. Well, that's a pretty big range. In other words, that's a 2-to-1 range. And again, when I see that kind of a range of an estimate of flu or the number of people who have coronavirus, it tells me that you don't really know what's going on. I mean, seriously, anybody who's ever done any science work, any engineering work, if somebody's got data that varies by a factor of 2, I would tell them to go back and test again before I make any assumptions on this. But let's just go with this. Let's assume that we look at this data. The new estimate then is 28 to 55 times higher than what they had estimated as 7,994 cases that had been reported to the county in early April, because there they were only reporting people that were very, very sick. So now they've gone out and they've tested everybody in the county, and they find out, well, we've got anywhere from 30 to 55 times more people. Now, the number of people who have died in that area is 600. So let's take the two different numbers that, again, are vary by a factor of 2, 221,000 or 442,000. Well, if it's the lower number, that would mean that you have a case fatality rate with 600 deaths and 221,000 people with coronavirus. That means that your case fatality rate would be 0.3%. 0.3%. Remember, for reference, the CDC always tells us that flu is 0.1%. If you take the higher number, 442,000, that would give you a case fatality rate of 0.15%. We're getting right about where the flu is, aren't we? I think it's also interesting to take a look at the fact that, you know, if you look at the Diamond Princess cruise ship, as I said a couple of weeks ago when I did that report on that, this is a worst-case scenario. You've got elderly people who are typically not in great health. They're living together, communally, eating at a buffet. That's why people go on these cruises, eat at a buffet. And then after you find people are sick, you lock them away in their rooms, except that infectious disease doctor went there and he said, that's the most scared I've ever been. I was more scared than when I was there with Ebola. What they found was a case fatality rate there of about 0.3%. Worst case. Welcome back as we look at this study in L.A. done by USC and the health department there. They say as they tested all the residents, they found that, no, it's not the 8,000 people that had symptoms. But turns out that looking at antibodies, that in the county, there were anywhere from 250,000 to about 500,000 people. So it turns out that with 600 people who have died, the case fatality rate then goes down to, depending on which of those two numbers I use, to 0.3% or 0.15%. case fatality rate, which the flu is 0.1%. And then you look at Stanford University. They examined California's Santa Clara County. So USC looks at L.A. Stanford looks at Santa Clara. And they tested everybody there. And they found that between 2.5% to 4.2% of the county's residents had antibodies to the coronavirus. Based on their results, the Stanford researchers estimated the mortality rate in Santa Clara County to be between 0.12 and 0.2%. Again, the flu is 0.1%. So about the same as flu, maybe slightly worse. So the findings of both LA and Santa Clara echo the results of other assessments. The Economist magazine cited a new study that found the fatal and highly contagious novel coronavirus has spread faster, but is actually not that fatal. But Fauci wants us locked down until we don't have a single case. And again, if we go back and we look at the Diamond Princess cruise ship, the one where everybody was eating together, and, you know, and then they found some people that got sick, and then they sent everybody back to their rooms, but then they had the staff was delivering food door to door, and the infectious disease doctor who went there, it was parked off the coast of Japan, and he said, "I've never been more scared in my life," because he didn't know how fatal this thing was at the time. And he said, "They're not following any quarantine procedures." So you got everybody in a closed environment here. This really was a worst case scenario. And what they had was, out of about 4,000 people, they had 600 people who tested positive. And half of those people had no symptoms whatsoever. They eventually had 12 people who died. And so they had a case fatality rate there that was about 0.3%. And that is a little bit higher than what they found in the general population, because, again, you've got people who are not necessarily in the best shape on the cruise ship. A lot of elderly people, a lot of people in wheelchairs, morbidly obese because they love to eat. That's why they go on the cruise ships. But we got Fauci saying the U.S. needs to triple the coronavirus testing, and he says that ending the lockdowns too soon could backfire. And, of course, that's what's being pushed by the Daily Beast. The only problem is we can't let up on this now, you know. We're winning. We're winning. Yeah, I know what they're winning. They're not winning the fight against the disease. They're winning the fight against our freedom. That's what they're winning. Fauci says no recovery possible if the virus isn't, quote, under control. How does he define that? By the way, I thought it was the virus that was in control of us. You know, we have to see what the virus is going to do. The virus is crowned. It's the crowned virus, the coronavirus, right? And so if they don't have tests, Facebook comes to the rescue. Facebook is going to be tracking symptoms by county. Remember, as their fatality rates were not adding up, as their death counts were not adding up, as the hospitalizations were not adding up, what did they do? Well, they presumed that people who were dying had coronavirus. And so we saw the number of heart attacks plummet, the number of these other diseases plummet, but coronavirus, now according to the CDC, number one killer in the country because they redefined it. And so now Facebook is going to do the same thing. They're going to track symptoms. And Facebook is going to presume hotspots across the nation and track them for the government. Don't tell me these people were not founded by the CIA and DARPA. I've pointed out the financial connections, the venture capital behind all these people. They were created for exactly this type of thing. Zuckerberg is now saying anybody who organizes any protests or the lockdown, who wants to talk about reopening, if you want to exercise those other First Amendment rights, you know, Zuckerberg and Facebook and Apple and Twitter, these people have already shut down, to a large extent, your free speech, as well as the free and independent media. Now they're coming after those other components of the First Amendment. You know, they've come after a lot of people who talked about their religious beliefs, right? They believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, or whatever it is that Facebook doesn't like. They will shut you down for that. Now they're going after the final component of the First Amendment. That is your ability to assemble in public and peacefully redress your grievances with government policy. Facebook is going to be shutting that down. Facebook is removing the events that are calling for protests. And if you want to organize one of these things, if the government complains, they will shut you down based on the government complaining about this. You don't understand that all of this from the very beginning has been, as I've said from the very beginning, this is about the iron fist of DARPA and the military industrial complex. And they say, well, look, this is just a private company. They've just decided to do this. I've seen them do this with debates, political debates, shutting out independent third-party candidates who have gone through the extra process of ballot access, and then they let the debates be run by a private corporation. The private corporation then says, no, we don't want you. Because a private corporation was put in power by the Republicans and the Democrats, just like Facebook and these other people were empowered by DARPA and the military industrial complex. And guess what? They are doing the censorship for those organizations as well. You know, I said from the very beginning, we saw Marsh versus Allo, you know, when they did this to InfoWars, and then 2 months later, they did it to another 800 sites. I said, Marsh versus Alabama, 1946. Even if the public square is privately owned, the government at that time said, our duty in the government is to protect individual liberty, not to allow a corporation to steal it because they're big, because they own the public square. No, even if you own the public square, you can't shut down private speech. That was 1946. Now we're in 2020. And the government uses the private corporations to shut down speech. YouTube. The CEO, anything that goes against the WHO is a violation of YouTube policies. If you go to anything where anybody is saying, mentions the word in the title, anything about COVID-19, you will see a link on YouTube directly to the CDC. And now they're defending the WHO as well. Pure propaganda. Pure propaganda. Ron Paul says, what if they got it wrong? Yeah, what if they intentionally didn't just make a mistake? What if this was a scheme? Yeah, Ron Paul is exactly right. They did get it wrong. I don't think it was a mistake. You always hear this from these politicians. Well, you know, mistakes were made. That's what they say when they get caught red-handed stealing. And in this particular case, what they're doing is they're stealing your businesses, they're stealing your jobs, they're stealing your future, they're stealing the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. But, you know, mistakes were made. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Mainstream propaganda. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Joining me now is Tony Arterburn. And of course, he has Tony has substituted for me many times, done a great job here as a guest host. He was in San Antonio, and he's now relocated up into the Branson, Missouri area. By the way, if you want to follow his news site, it is arterburn.news. That's A-R-T-E-R-B-U-R-N. And you can also find him on Twitter at Tony Arterburn. And Tony, first of all, I want to find out what's going on in Branson, Missouri. I mean, you got out of the area where they locked it down really hard there in San Antonio. I mean, they were one of the first places to shut down all church services and so forth. And fortunately, you got out of the city and into a much more rural area. But what is it like in the rural area of Branson, Missouri?
Well, you know, this is the Ozark Mountains area, David, and I own a little bit of land in northwest Arkansas, about 20 acres. And I decided in September of 2019 that I was going to relocate my family and really with financial devastation, because I said, I really don't see how we're going to not have some big event happen. And that I don't possess some magical mental powers. I just gut level felt that. And yeah. I told my wife, and we had a shop in San Antonio for gold and silver. And I just said, look, the lease is running out on January 31st. Let's just move to our acreage. I'll get an office in Branson, Missouri. And we got out on the 31st of January. I think the first confirmed case of COVID-19 was like 2 or 3 days later. And so, yeah, it was, and I'm really thankful. I'm blessed. I get to a lot of nature around me, but you know, we, We're up here, and we got here just in time for everything to close. Yeah. So,
it's good that you also are in gold and silver. That's another good place to be. Not only out in the more rural setting, but also being positioned in that. That's a good thing.
Absolutely. It's all, you know, gold and silver are money. Everything else is credit.
That's right. That's right. You know, today is San Jacinto Day. Sunday was the 245th anniversary of Concord and Lexington. But, you know, it's kind of interesting because both of these celebrations have now been shut down by the government. Looks like Santa Ana and King George have won after all.
Right. Santa Ana, they has nothing on bureaucrats now. I mean, this is the 184th anniversary of the victory, the Battle of San Jacinto. And I have to thank your producer, Travis, for allowing me to come on and talk about this history because, you know, I'm an amateur historian, but I love the history. And I got to break out some of my old biographies on Sam Houston. And of course, these old writers back in the 20s, like Marcus James, they didn't know anything about political correctness. They didn't know about censorship. And so yeah. I got to read some wonderful history this morning. I woke up early just to go over my notes. And, you know, two things struck me that I wanted to talk to you about the Battle of San Jacinto. One, when the army was getting ready to attack the, you know, the army of the Mexican army, under the command of Santa Ana, the flag that was unfurled said liberty or death. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, there was a reverence for the spirit of liberty. There was this this desire to create that. And these people, you know, the folks that volunteered to make that happen. Of course, it was very, really a mixed bag. You know, Sam Houston had to hold this army together and retreat. They called it the runaway scrape. It was after the Alamo fell. It was this long retreat. We're trying to hold his army together and draw Santa Ana supply lines out. But when they decided to attack, Sam Houston, you know, had given the order to blow the bridges. You know, there was no retreat for either side. And they were way outnumbered. There was only about 300 or so soldiers on the Texas side. So, you know, the battle lasted 18 minutes. Santa Ana donned a private's uniform and was later captured and brought back to Sam Houston. And the thing that I wanted to talk to you about is what Santa Ana said. He said that it was when they're asked about Goliad, the massacre there, you know, Colonel Fannin just asked not to be shot in the face. And of course, he was shot in the face. His men were all murdered. Yeah. The Alamo completely decimated, all 187 defenders killed. And Santa Ana said, well, I was acting on behalf of the government. And Sam Houston said, you are the government. You know, and it's so funny when history bears out, you see these petty.
It sounds like a White House press conference today, doesn't it?
Right. Everybody blames somebody
else.
Or
the Congress or whatever. Yeah. It was the virus that did it. I didn't have anything to do. Or it was the CDC or it was Fauci or whatever. Right.
Right. Yeah. It was just this blame game. And you get to see how petty and small they are. But I tell you, during COVID 1984, you know, Samuel Johnson said that patriotism was the last refuge of a scoundrel. Well, I think in a lot of these times now that history is the last refuge for a patriot. So yeah. I spend a lot of my time in books.
Well, you know, you talk about, you know, live free or die attitudes that people had at that time, and you contrast it with today. I mean, you know, as people listen to us all over the world. And so for those of you who don't know, by the way, San Jacinto was the defeat of Santa Ana, as you just heard Tony talk about that. But leading up to that, of course, we had the Alamo where everybody was massacred. They knew they were going to be massacred. They refused to surrender. They had a 100% fatality rate, and they knew it was going to be a 100% fatality rate. And then at Goliad, the people there were massacred. And so it was, as you pointed out, with Sam Houston, they didn't know that the same thing wasn't going to happen to them. You know, there were 9 provinces of Mexico, I believe was the count, that rebelled against Santa Ana when he took charge of the Mexican government. All these different provinces did not want to be under Santa Ana. And yet there were only, I think, 3 of them that actually had any kind of physical conflict. He conquered all of them except for Texas. So it wasn't just people in Texas that were rebelling against this tyranny. It was every part of Mexico that was rebelling against this guy. And he was a murdering tyrant because he was an absolute leader. But we don't respect liberty anymore. And that's the key thing, I think, Tony, is that nobody values that anymore. They don't understand that not having liberty is one of the biggest threats to your health there can possibly be. And there is no appreciation for devotion, I should say, that the hearts of the fathers and the mothers are not really turned to their kids. They're turned simply on themselves. They don't care about even laying down their lives to establish a legacy of freedom for their children.
Yeah, I think the difference then and now is the flag being unfurled, liberty or death. I think we confuse the patriotism and the state, you know, love of the state with love of liberty now.
That's right.
And
that's right.
That's the confusion I think we have on our side is love of the state instead of love of actual liberty and freedom. And so that's the difference.
Yeah, we have to understand we have a misplaced allegiance, don't we? You know, we can misplace that allegiance into a person. We can misplace it into a political party. We can misplace it into any kind of institution. It always has to be the North Star for America was always liberty. And if you are not willing to stand for that, you will fall for anything. And, you know, it's even C.S. Lewis pointed out the fact that people are not willing to sacrifice for that freedom are people who are not going to get it. You know, you have to be willing to give up everything in order to have anything. And we have fallen to the point where nobody values, understands what the real values are anymore. We got to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about what's going on at the actual Alamo, because at Arterburn News, Arterburn.news, you have an op-ed piece asking, will the Alamo fall twice? And what does he mean by this? Well, it turns out that there's somebody with the name of Bush who is an up-and-coming politician, and he's got a plan for the Alamo, and it will be the destruction of it finally. And how more fitting could it be than a Bush who would take down the Alamo finally when these other tyrants in history have failed to do so? All right, we've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Tony Arterburn. You can find him on Twitter at Tony Arterburn and also at Arterburn.news. We'll be right back. Welcome back. As we hear the overture to Silverado, we have a man who sells silver and gold, Tony Arterburn. He has positioned himself pretty well. He sells silver and gold, and he moved out of an urban area down in San Antonio up into a rural area just in time, the end of January, as you heard him say. And I want to talk about what's going on with the Alamo, though. Tony, living in San Antonio, still very much attuned to what is happening there. And he's got an op-ed piece at Arterburn.news. Will the Alamo fall twice? What does he mean by this? Before we do, real quickly, though, Tony, I just want to follow up as to specifically what is happening up there in the Branson, Missouri area where you are, because that's a tourist area there. I imagine it's really been decimated.
I'm having a hard time hearing you, Dave.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Hear you now, sir.
Okay, good. I was asking about Branson, Missouri, with it being a tourist area. I imagine it's been pretty much decimated there. Is everything closed down?
Just about everything is closed. I mean, you have some, I guess, what you would call essential businesses. I consider myself essential because if you have gold and silver, you need to turn it into fiat currency to pay a bill because you have no job now. I would assume that I'm essential. So I'm still open. But there are many, many small businesses, especially the restaurants that are closed. A great deal of them, I assume, will never reopen again.
Well, I think all businesses are essential to the people who work for them and the people who have spent all their life building them. And I think it's essential to allow businesses to stay open unless we want to have some kind of a forced Marxism put on us to where we shut down the middle class and then we make everybody welfare dependents, which apparently is the way that both Republicans and Democrats are fighting over who can do it the fastest. We're not cutting out checks quickly enough for everybody. So let's step this up. And Pelosi's in the way. No, it's Trump doesn't want to give people enough money. I don't want to live off of welfare from the government. And I don't want to have a system of Marxism, universal basic indigence, which is what they're putting out for everybody. What is going on? Are the restaurants closed? Are the schools closed in Missouri?
Schools are closed, to my knowledge, and you have some restaurants remain open with takeout, but that's pretty limited. You know, if you're a small business, that's really, really hard if you don't have some, you know, corporate management company sending you capital. That would be really, really tough. So there is a few remaining corporate businesses that are open for takeout, things like that. But it's really sad to watch.
Churches, are they closed?
Churches are closed.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about what's going on. Once upon a time, when people fought for their freedom, the Alamo, and your piece about will the Alamo fall twice? What do you mean by that? What's going on with the Alamo?
Well, since 2017, there has been a push to reimagine the Alamo. Of course, George P. Bush. Now, I love these Orwellian terms. George P. Bush took over as Texas Land Commissioner in 2015. He immediately then moved to get rid of the Daughters of the Republic of Texas that had overseen the Alamo since 1913. He got rid of them by showing up and locking them out of their facilities, and they had to file a lawsuit to get back their computers, to get back their files and all the rest. But he went in there and took everything from them, seized it, and then they created this plan, which has been in the works for a while now. It's a $500 million rollout to, like you said, I got talking about reimagining the Alamo. It's really or strange this the new labeling that they want to do. So it's a kind of a theme parkish type scenario where you remove so much of the theme of the battle and make it more about culturally appropriate scenarios and such. It's kind of murky. You know, they had a big rollout where they called the big reveal, where they're going to put up these giant glass walls around the perimeter and actually get rid of all the trees that were around the Alamo and some of the other things that have come up since. And of course, the cenotaph was a thing that had to be banished according to this plan. The cenotaph, the monument that stood out in front of the Alamo since 1936, which means empty tomb. It's to commemorate the fallen. And that's been a big battle, of course, only really
grassroots. Yeah, put up on the 100th anniversary of the Alamo, they put it up.
Correct.
That's why it's called the cenotaph, yeah.
And I'd always wondered during writing about this why the history of the people that have, you know, preserved the Alamo didn't matter. You know, why didn't their memory matter even 100 years later or 200 years later? It's crazy that they are removing so much of the history. And there's only so many people fighting this battle. I mean, it's really grassroots. You know, the Republican Party has been completely absent and out to lunch on this, especially the main part of the GOP. I know Governor Abbott knows about it, but they just basically said, well, you know, George P. Bush is in charge. And of course, the mayor of San Antonio, they don't even call it the Alamo anymore. They call it the Mission San Antonio de Valero.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, you've got the Castro, was it Julian Castro? One of the Castro twins.
Right.
And, he wants to just basically present it as a Spanish mission and completely ignore and eradicate all the history about independence. And so I guess really what we ought to call it, instead of reimagining the Alamo, I think George Bush, George P. Bush, Jeb's son, right? We need to rename it as Forget the Alamo, right? Because these people, and here's the thing, they're going, this is a systematic deconstruction of America. Is happening across America. They say, well, we got to take down all the Civil War monuments. And that's both sides of the Civil War. They Right. take down the Columbus monuments. They take down the Alamo. Everywhere across America, they want to eradicate America's foundation, America's history. Why? Because it was based on liberty.
Yes, based on liberty. And there's also a source of strength in history and heroes. There's also some inspiration mm-hmm. that could be taken from our imperfect ancestors, but they loved liberty. They wanted to create a civilization and a culture based on liberty. That's why we have a constitution. You know, Texas was once its own country, a republic. You know, and so we have to be told to forget those things, or that it was a terrible history. And I'm telling you, that's the cultural Marxism. That's the appropriation of these monuments. The total, you know, desecration of them is to cut you off from your history. I think it was, you know, Solzhenitsyn who said, if you want to destroy a people, first sever their roots.
That's right. And it, going back to Pete Buttigieg, who is now no longer running for president, his mentor was a guy named Sakvan Berkovich and at Harvard. And this is a guy who changed his first name to honor Sacco and Vanzetti, famous Marxists in the early 20th century. And everything that Sakvan Berkovich did, and you can hear it echoed in what Pete Buttigieg would always talk about, everything was about deconstructing America and talking about how hateful the Christian roots of America were. And so, you know, they basically attack America. Everything that this guy did at Harvard was based on that. And, of course, Buttigieg's father was also spent his entire life writing the biography of the guy who founded the Italian Communist Party and lionizing that guy. So this is cultural Marxism. And unfortunately, what we now have happening in America is economic Marxism, because they've now set out to destroy the middle class and to put everybody on government income, and the same income too, Tony. Everybody gets the same government cheese check every month.
That's right. And everyone's equal. Some are more equal than others with the government doleouts, as we've seen with the big banks, the too big to fail and too big to jail. Right. Yeah, that all stems from the cultural Marxism, the Frankfurt School, Gramsci. You know, that was the Antonio Gramsci was who Buttigieg's father studied and idolized. And so we're seeing this all play out and roll out. Now it's just the quickening. You know, you always talk about gradually, then suddenly. Yeah, that quote from Hemingway, that's happening right now.
It is.
And so we're experiencing a major shift. And if we're not careful, we're going to lose everything.
Yeah, it's always, we knew what the plan was going to be. We just didn't know how they were going to initiate it. And I'm really totally surprised at how quickly it has happened and how easily so many people on the right have rolled over for this out of a misplaced loyalty to politics and to people. Thank you so much, Tony. And again, you can find his writing at arterburn.news, and you can find Tony on Twitter at Tony Arterburn. Thank you very much, Tony.
Thank you,
folks,
David.
Just
God
before
bless
we go
you.
To thank you. Before we go to break, I just want to remind you about the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, because you need things to help you to stay strong and healthy. And we've got Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off. You can get your recommended daily allowance of zinc and many other vitamins, minerals, and amino acids in an easy-to-take liquid format. Also, vitamin D3, winter sun, a liquid formulation of vitamin D3, essential to the proper operation of your immune system. And if you want to make sure that you can get access and have access to food, you can place your order right now for InfoWars Storable Food at InfoWarsStore.com. Thanks for listening.